lots better than this. Guys being dudes here on the Draft Dudes Podcast. Presented by Locked On, it's Joe Marino and Kyle Krabs from the Draft Network. And we are your hosts here on this Wednesday edition of the show. Kyle, it's been a while since we had a guest, and we've got a good one lined up today.
Oh, buddy. Was the last one we had, was it Divine Azigbo, the last guest we had here on Draft Dudes?
Either Brian Burns or Divine Azigbo.
I think it was Divine. No, I think it was Brian. They were both great guests, and today's guest is also going to be really, really good. So let's not waste any time. We got a very special guest on the show with us today. We have one of the great quarterback gurus. Mr. Steve Clarkson is going to join us today on the show. We're really excited to have him on to talk about quarterback play. Steve's been doing this for a very, very, very long time. Steve, obviously the big game this weekend is between two of the top teams in the country and two of those top quarterback prospects eligible for the 2020 NFL draft, going toe-to-toe with one another with Tua Tagovailoa and Joe Burrow. Can you just tell us a little bit about your exposure to both of these guys and your impressions on how the NFL will covet them based on their 2019 seasons thus far, based on what you've been able to see of them?
Well, first of all, thanks for having me on. I've seen a lot more of Tua Tagovailoa just because I've known him since high school, and you know, coming from Hawaii, he'd come visit, come spend some time out with us at our camps in Los Angeles. Joe is just somebody that I've watched from afar, and I've seen his talent. Obviously, he's the son of a coach, and you know, he's displayed, you know, an uncanny ability to lead an offense that was basically back in the Stone Age and turn this thing into must-see TV. If you ask people quietly, privately, I should say, in his days back at Ohio State, especially leading up to the year that he departed, where Dwayne Haskins ended up being the starter, most people actually believe that those spring practices that Joe Burrow actually outperformed him. And I had that from many of people from the inside. So it's not a surprise that he's gone to LSU and in 2 years has really shown exactly what kind of player he was. I mean, he's obviously extremely talented. He's got that football background. And as I said, his dad was a coach. And that's what you're seeing, you know, on display. In Tua's case, what you're seeing is a guy that has really always been at a high level. He's always been at the top program, dating back to his high school back at St. Louis and Honolulu. He was, I know for a fact that he was USC's number one target overall, and coming out, a lot of people thought, just, you know, the amount of time that he visited Los Angeles, that that's where he was headed. But he ended up going to University of Alabama, and the rest is history. I think when you are looking at this game in particular with, you know, two juggernauts, it's obviously everybody's going to have their eyes, glued to the television set. With Tua, the case is always going to be how healthy he is. You know, is he going to be able to do the things that we're accustomed to seeing, you know, that he normally does? Are we going to see that? In Joe Burrow's case, this is really the first hype game that he's had. You know, the Texas game early on obviously had some juice to it, buzz to it, but since then, you know, Texas has sort of faded a little bit. So now that has lost its luster a little bit. So this will be the game that can really, you know, put that charge and solidify him. It's really, I think, potentially a top 10 pick. He's given me enough of a perfect painting on his canvas to warrant that sort of proclamation. So in Tua's case, we're going to see just how bad the injury was. I've been told that it's not nearly the same injury that he's had before. He has a procedure done on it that's left him out for 2 weeks, and supposedly his practices are going extremely well, and we'll see what happens. One thing I will caution a lot of people when it comes to watching these people, and I always crack up when I hear people or teams are tanking for, you know, quarterbacks or draft picks, or, you know, in this case, you've heard a lot of, you know, Miami tanking for Tua. Just absolute nonsense. A lot of the NFL people, personnel, have really not gone into a hard evaluation. That the process is really long. I think what you'll find out in many cases over the next you know, a couple of drafts, you know, from here on out, Senior Bowl is going to have a lot to say about it. I mean, they made some adjustments in terms of getting guys in the game who graduated early and allowing them the opportunity to play in the game. So with, you know, in respect to Tua, I think that, you know, we're just, this is really the start of that process, because so many people will be watching this game. And for Joe Burrow, this will truly be his coming out party. And I think he lays, if they're able to win, I think he probably runs away with a Heisman Trophy.
Steve, you know, one of my favorite aspects of watching both of these quarterbacks play, Tua and Burrow, is how well they handle pressure. Now, looking at that from a coaching perspective, is that something that you either have or don't, or is it something that you believe is teachable? And I know you've worked with Tua, so I'd like to hear specifically what makes him so calm and dynamic when things are breaking down around him.
I just think it really starts at the younger levels, you know, especially now when you look at, you know, the way recruiting is kind of transformed, especially through social media. You know, a lot of the stories essentially are now broken from individuals' camps, if you will. So the hype starts so much younger. And, you know, in a case of Tua in particular, where he played at a high profile program and was a highly recruited player coming out, his ability to kind of walk into a scenario like Alabama really is kind of very organic, because he's essentially has taken all those proper steps at a younger age. He was on the top 7-on-7 teams. And so, you know, with that, you kind of, you know, you get in an extreme conscious state, you get that development and a lot of those traits that you talk about, that it factor trait that really nobody teaches. You just sort of, some guys have it and some don't. And he clearly had developed those traits at an early stage, and you know, he's playing in these big games. It really is just another game. I mean that they really separate, you know, the noise outside, and they're able to tackle the task at hand.
Steve, I'd like to keep things on the mental side of the game for quarterbacks. Obviously, there's a baseline level physical skill set that's required to play at a high level. But for both of these guys, they're both incredibly intelligent players. You mentioned Joe Burrow being the son of the coach, and having worked with Tua for as long as you have, you've had the opportunity to see that up close and personal. One of the biggest areas of struggle for quarterbacks going to the NFL level is the speed and complexity of the defenses that they see versus a lot of what they get. Can you give the common football fan a little bit of an appreciation for the depth of information that you have to be able to process as a high-level quarterback in a very short amount of window from the time you break the huddle to get up to the snap of the football, and then how quickly that information based on what you're processing from the defense can change in just a couple of seconds after the snap?
Well, I think the biggest thing that has changed the NFL is it's actually not as complicated as it once was. It's actually become a lot more simplified. You know, quarterbacks, you know, offensive coordinators now pretty much know, for example, what type of defense they're going to get just based on, you know, what type of personnel they're using. You know, there's so many looks that they're going to get, and they've seen them all. They've processed them all in practice. And like I said, in a very, you know, from a walkthrough stage to three-quarter stage to a full, you know, full speed to one versus one. They get the speed and the little nuances of the game that happens weeks and months before, because they actually have been practicing against it for a long period of time. Most of these teams run pretty much the same offensive, you know, schematics for the most part. And obviously terminology may be different, and certainly level of talent certainly changes, you know, what certain teams can do versus others. And you look at, you know, what's happening in Alabama, for example, with that unbelievable receiving core, they're obviously able to take advantage of a lot more opportunities. But in terms of, you know, the actual mental side of it, as I said before, these things have taken place for these guys for a longer period of time. So they walk into, you know, their prospective colleges, and the game has already been slowed down for them a great deal. So that's why you're seeing, you know, when you're looking at from the collegiate level, how many, you know, true freshmen now are starting to make an impact. And when you look at it from the NFL standpoint, they've essentially adopted the college system because out of necessity, because the players that are being developed are more suited for that game. And that game is is obviously organically transformed itself into the National Football League because it works. And I think what you're also seeing when it comes to the quarterback, they're basically the new and improved running back 2.0. So for the guys that are essentially, maybe 5 years ago, you said this guy's a dual threat quarterback. It essentially meant that this kid was a great athlete, but he really couldn't throw, right? He probably going to play another position. Now they look at dual threat quarterback like he's multilingual, like he can speak several languages, and that's always a plus. And so when you look at this position and look at the pay scale going forward and why Tua and these guys will get drafted high, probably higher than maybe even they should be, just because the formula has already been set. You win with a young quarterback. We put him in a position where we do the things that he's done extremely well in college, and let's not make the curve so high. And we basically will run the hell out of him. And if he gets beat up and he's essentially, out on the streets in 4 or 5 years, that's kind of the running back mentality now. You draft a running back, the life expectancy of a good running back is probably 6 to 7 years. And I think when you look at the quarterback position, it's kind of gone the same way. Look at what happened at Arizona. The salary cap and the rookie wage scale has made it so that if you miss on a quarterback, it doesn't cripple your franchise. So the teachings essentially now have been geared more towards, let's make it more conducive for them to have early success, and let's get the most out and let's build around them, and then we'll determine what our quarterback is really worth.
Steve, you mentioned the really good supporting cast that Alabama has, and something that maybe cautions people when projecting Tua to the NFL is taking into account that he has really good weapons to throw the football to. And this year, especially, he's getting the ball out so fast. How much do you think we should be taking into account how quickly he gets the ball out and the supporting cast that's really good at Alabama?
Well, I think you take it all into account, but when you go in the National Football League, for the most part, you're looking at guys that are at a high level. And, not anybody can make it to that point. So when I watch Tua, what I want to see is decision-making, his anticipation skills, his ability to throw sophisticated passes. He throws the ball at different angles, different speeds. Those are the guys that when you watch, you say, okay, this guy has the ability to essentially play in any type of scheme because they understand the game so well. Where you try to, find that one guy that can give you, that ability to change a play within a play, then you have something special. Tua's not a guy that's going to, beat you with his legs, but he can beat you with subtle moves and then, subtle different angles of throws that you say, oh, wow, I don't know how you got that ball out of there. But not only did he get it out there, it was extremely accurate. When you look at a Joe Burrow, he's even more on the anticipatory side. He has the ability to really know what's going to happen before it actually happens. There's a game I like to play with my quarterbacks, and I don't know if you remember going into the arcade, you play whack-a-mole. Remember that game where you take the little mallet and you try to, react to the little mole that comes out and you smack them upside the head. Well, essentially, when quarterbacks are looking at their pre-snap read, they're going through a process of elimination, and it's literally, if you have one bullet, in your gun, where's the ball going to go based on what you see right now? So the ability to anticipate, where the ball needs to go and being able to get it out there quickly and accurately has really been the thing that I've noticed the most over the last couple of years. Guys just aren't getting hit like they used to because they're able to get rid of the ball, a lot more quickly and accurately because they've decided, they have a pretty good idea of where the ball is going to go.
Steve, another criticism that I guess Tua gets, and I'm not sure if it's fair or not, is the fact that he's left-handed. And how much do you think that matters? Is it something that NFL decision makers will really take into consideration when evaluating Tua?
I have not heard that one in the 30 plus years of, teaching position, playing it. You've got some great left-handed quarterbacks in the Football Hall of Fame. I don't think I think where it really comes into play is maybe, how you evaluate your offensive tackle, because now for the most part, most people look at the left tackle because you're predominantly, a right-handed quarterback or what have you. So that may be an issue, but I think, you know, for the most part, that's not going into play. I think you're just looking at productivity, and, you know, there's really not that big of a difference, in my opinion.
Steve, I listened to a couple of interviews that you had done in the past before we got on the phone with you, and you had done one with CBS out in L.A., and you said one of the first youth players that you ever worked with was actually Steve Sarkisian, who has since gone on to obviously find a lot of success and is now Tua's offensive coordinator at Alabama. And you said you told his dad from pretty early on that you didn't think he had a career in the NFL in his future because of some physical limitations. When you work with quarterbacks at a young age, how quickly can you kind of draw that line and figure out if a guy has that legitimate ceiling? And specifically, since Tua is playing in this game, what was from the time you started working with Tua, how quickly did you realize that he has some pretty special qualities?
Well, I mean, the person that actually deserves most of the credit for what happens with, or what has happened with Tua, is his dad. You know, it's really funny. The first time I watched him, you know, came out, and his dad said, "Hey," he went to this camp, and they were really, you know, getting on him about his throwing motion, and he couldn't do this, and he couldn't do that. He's really distraught. And I saw the kid, and I said, "I don't know who told you, you know, what they told you." I said, "But I'm sure, based on what I'm seeing, he's working with somebody. Whoever that somebody is, tell them I think they're doing a hell of a job." And he just smiled. He said, "What, with me?" I said, "Well, then you got it." Because, you know, look, you watch, I got DirecTV, you see 13 games, you see 26 different quarterbacks out there. They all do it somewhat differently. They've all had numerous coaches that, you know, have had an influence on their life. At the end of the day, you know, the kids that make it, the players that make it, you know, there's so much luck and opportunity that goes into this, but at the end of the day, it still comes down to the kids, and certain kids just have a certain ability to perform and others don't. And that's what you're saying. You know, you got guys who are walking around. I'm not going to ever sit out and take credit for somebody's ability on the field. They do that on their own. They have their parents that have raised them and put them in situations, and then the kids just flat out, they do the work. And at the end of the day, that's what it's going to take to get you to the NFL. They don't have time to make you into something. You either have it or you don't. Hopefully they've evaluated, you know, the young men properly, and they get them in the right system, and then the rest takes care of itself.
Now, Steve, I know you've worked with a lot of different quarterbacks, a lot of talented quarterbacks that have went a long way in the NFL. When you think about Tua and, you know, his makeup, his mental makeup, physical makeup, all those types of things, what would you point to as an indicator that would make people believe that he's going to be a very successful NFL quarterback?
Well, just the fact, the way he handled his first year at Alabama. You know, he went to there with a very, very talented quarterback in Jalen Hurts. He was a, you know, freshman, just finished off. I believe they had just lost in the championship game against Clemson. But he had a heck of a season. And the fact that he walked himself into a situation where most kids would have said, "I'm not going there because I'm never going to play," he took that as a challenge unto himself that not only would he go to the school of his choice, but he would eventually be the guy. And that tells you a lot about his intestinal fortitude, that he had enough belief in his teachings and his ability that he could go in and not only take that job over, but do it extremely well.
That's going to do it for us with Steve. We want to thank you a whole bunch for your time. Really appreciate the insight. And I personally really enjoyed hearing you kind of go through the way the game has evolved in recent years. And obviously you've had an opportunity to see that first and foremost with all of your coaching of a really lot of talented prep guys coming up through and even guys that, have since, as Joe said, gone on to have a lot of professional success. So thank you very much for your time. We'll get you out of here, and we hope to be able to catch up with you again sometime soon, Steve.
Oh, anytime, especially talking quarterbacks. Love to do it.
All right, Joe. Mr. Steve Clarkson in the books, official Draft Dudes alumni, and I would put him right at the top, to be honest with you.
Yeah, you know, we prepared for the interview, and I was really excited to see Steve kind of take the answers in places I wasn't really expecting. And I learned a lot from you know, Steve, and he gave us some angles that I wasn't anticipating. I mean, especially with talking about some of the reasons why Tua, he believes Tua could be successful, and talking about how he handled that Alabama situation in year one and how he's shown a competitive drive, and just created a lot more optimism than even I had going into the conversation about both Burrow and Tua.
Well, and I think if you kind of reflect on what Steve said about both of these guys, one of the biggest things he highlighted, I love the whack-a-mole analogy that he made.
Yeah.
Where he's talking about, all right, you've only got one bullet. Where's it going? Before the snap, you got to ask that question. You got to look at it and know. And you and I have talked about Joe Burrow within the last couple of days, really trying to familiarize ourselves with him as a guy who wasn't quite on the same radar as what Tua was entering the season. And you said to me, like, dude, this is one of the sharpest guys before the snap I can remember watching in a long time. And like, that's so apparent with him. So that analogy that Steve made of as far as the game he likes to play with the quarterbacks he works with really resonated with me, where it's like, that's Burrow, because he knows if he's got trips off to the right and one guy's sagging off at 8 and his hips aren't square and he's hinging like he's going to bail, that's where the ball's going to go right away.
Yeah, and that's just pop on the Burrow tape any game you want. You're going to see that over and over and over again. He's the master of pre-snap reads and how that should dictate post-snap decisions. I mean, that's why he has nearly an 80% passer rating, right? Because he understands leverage, where to go with the football. Kyle, how about his comments about when you asked him about the information on a quarterback's plate, going from breaking the huddle to post-snap and all that information to process? Took an angle there I don't think either one of us was expecting in terms of the game's become simpler.
Yeah, and it makes sense, right? And that was the big stereotype for college offenses was, well, this is too basic. It's not going to work in the NFL because they're going to be able to scheme it up. But what he talked about running or quarterbacks being running backs 2.0 is the extension that now allows this kind of offensive philosophy to thrive the way it has in the NFL. Joe, think about every young stud quarterback in the NFL right now. They're all guys that can make things happen with their legs, right?
Mm-hmm.
So like, if you don't have that kind of spacing threat, then you better be super sharp with pre-snap. And we talked about that, and Steve talked about with both of these guys getting the ball out of their hands so damn fast they don't get hit. But yeah, I mean, and I was expecting him to talk about how both of these guys are sharp, and he kind of went the other way with it and was like, well, I mean, at its core, offenses in the NFL, they're running a lot of similar concepts across all kinds of offenses with all kinds of personnels, unless you get like a real outlier with a team that wants to go against the grain. We've talked about that on the show in recent weeks, talking about specifically what San Francisco is doing out west, right? But I really appreciated that insight. It's a big eye opener for like, okay, we are seeing guys come into the professional level, and we do see a ton of freshman quarterbacks every single year that come in and have success right away. And a lot of this comes down to the root philosophies and concepts that they're implementing have kind of pollinated their way up to the NFL level, which will help us as we look to kind of decipher which quarterbacks have the goods to make it in the NFL and which don't.
Also, Steve laughed me off when I talked about Tua being left-handed. Yeah. So we can put that to bed, man. He's like, nah, you know, I've not heard that before, but thanks for asking, Joe. So that was a good piece of insight for me that, I mean, I'm going to laugh off that question when I get it from here moving forward. If it's not a concern for Steve or the NFL, it's not going to be a concern for Joe Marino and the people that asked me the question.
No. So it's good. Steve doesn't read our mentions that often. That's
no.
Good.
It's like, why are you asking me this, man?
It's like what? That's a real thing. Oh, if he only knew, what the Twitter world was like, it's better off if he doesn't.
No, stay away, brother.
I hope everybody enjoyed getting to hear Steve talk about quarterback play and evaluation of quarterbacks and some of the intangibles. And he talked a lot about stuff that's not physical, right? Like he talked about the value in having the ability to make things happen with your legs. He talked about, but he also talked about with Tua, he talked about kind of his fearlessness to attack the opportunity at Alabama. and he talked about Joe Burrow's quick decision making, and that a lot of times I feel like is easy to get glossed over because it's not something you can definitively see and measure on tape. But both of these guys we think are the top two quarterback prospects for the 2020 NFL draft, and a big reason why is because they have those kinds of variables. Anytime you talk to people that know these two players and you watch them and you see how sharp they are and how quickly and decisively they make decisions and how consistently it's the right decision, we're in for really, really good football game this weekend. And I hope everybody enjoys it. And I hope you can kind of call back on to some of what Steve was able to give us for insight. But that's going to do it for us today on the show. Tomorrow is top 25 picks against the spread. Mark your calendars, come back. We have to do the Free Money Thursday drawing from this past weekend. And Joe, I hate to say, Free Money Thursday is dead.
You weren't going to let it get to triple figures.
I'm not trying to pay out $100. So this will be the last drawing for Free Money Thursday. I hope you played, because if not, my ego is bruised. I continue to bat approximately 50-55% on a weekly basis. Unless it's the free money pick, in which case I'm batting like 35%.
Oh, boy.
So it's dead. It is officially dead. This show is over. Come back and see us again tomorrow. Thanks, as always, for listening to the Draft News Podcast.